welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for May 7th. It's brought to you by Shooters in Nagoya. I'm John Gibson, and with me as usual is Jim Allen. What's happening, bud?
Hey, not too much. Enjoying the weird weather today.
Enjoying? People were killed out there. There were tornadoes going around out there. What are you talking about enjoying?
Well, that part I was not enjoying, but as far as the beautiful sunshine and the weird storm and being inside.
Being inside. It always helps when you're inside when all those bad things are happening outside. Well, this week we got an interview with Brian Bullington of the Hiroshima Carp. We're going to talk about milestones again, and we're going to touch on a few other topics and answer some questions. So let's start clearing the bases. All right, so this past week I got a chance to actually I asked Brian Bullington to sneak behind the dugout right after they usually kick the press off the field. He was gracious enough to give us some time. He poked his head out the door and we talked for a couple minutes. Now, the beginning of this video, I wish it were video, the beginning of this interview has a little bit of wind in the background, so it's kind of rough at the beginning, but it smooths out once they close the door. So if you,
wasn't the hot air, okay.
Wasn't the hot air coming out from out of my mouth, but
okay.
Now, Brian was on the show last year. He was on Volume 1, show number 18, if you'd like to go back and review, so we won't tell you about all his history and everything. But he did start out the year 4-0 last year and looked like he was going to be a real dominant force here in Japan, but he slowed down a little bit. Now, he's not a hack or anything. He's a very competent pitcher, but he's playing with a
hack.
No, I'm just saying, I mean, his record is 2-3 right now, and his ERA is 2.93, which I think in this pitching environment this season can be considered on the high side. 2.3 is the new 4.0. But, yeah, it was good actually to get his perspective on a couple things. So
I'm perfectly good with Mr. Bullington. I have lots of interesting things going on with him. Okay.
All right, so let's take a listen to the interview. Joining us for a second time is Brian Bullington, coming off of his first win over the Giants. Did you know that? Of course you knew that.
Yeah, you guys let me know that quite often. So
don't say you guys, because we don't...
like the group of guys together. But no, I knew, we had some games that were really close last year, you know, pitched a couple decent games against them, but unable to come up with a win. So, it felt good last night, threw the ball pretty well, and, you know, we got some runs there in the middle of the game that we were able to hold on.
Has that team given you fits a little bit?
The Giants?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I mean, they got to me once or twice last year where I felt like, you know, they put up some runs. But other than that, it was one or two, and we just didn't get anything across. So they have a good lineup, though. I mean, you look in our league, they're as deep as any team. Sign Murata from Yokohama. Obviously, they lost Ramirez. But, Chono's one of the best hitters in the league. Sakamoto, you know, is always dangerous. And then Takahashi's killed me. I've had to, change my approach with him a little bit. And then with the addition of Valker this year, you know, he's dangerous as well.
Talk about your rotation now. I think this rotation matches up with any in Japan, I think.
Yeah, I really think, getting Otaki back, is huge for us. Just a guy with experience. He's competitive, keeps us in a game every time he's out there. And then, what Yusuke's done here to start the season has been, I think everybody expected him to do well. But to throw the way that he has at this point has been, it's been really fun to watch. Watch a guy his age, first time in this league come and do what he's done to these teams. It's been very impressive and very good for our team.
Now break down this rotation. I mean, you got the rookies and one rookie, and then a guy who should be rookie of the year last year.
Yeah, we've got you got obviously Mike Ken, who's as good as anybody in this league. We have a feeling, every time he gets the ball, we got a chance to win. Fukui's got as good a stuff as anybody. When he's locked in and right, he's really tough for teams to hit. And then, like I said, Otaki and Nomura, have been really good. And, we expect that out of them every time. And then, I'm doing, what I did last year at this point, continue to throw strikes and try to keep some ball games. And, we really do feel every time, we go out there that we've got a chance to win. If we can get some runs early, we got a chance to hold the other team down.
Well, speaking of runs, it's been a struggle for everybody scoring runs on and off here. But talk about the ball. Is it more of a story now than it was last year to you?
Not really. I still feel like when guys hit the ball, it goes. To me, we've been talking about it a lot. You know, obviously Stabby, it's his first year over here, so you're talking about the differences from home. And for me, the ball's not really an issue. I think, the strike zone's more of an issue than the ball. I think if guys are forced to throw the ball over the plate more, you're going to see a lot more runs. And that's just not the case. As a pitcher, it's great. You know, I feel like I get some pitches that you're not used to getting at home. But I still feel like when guys actually hit a ball, it's gone. I've given up, plenty of home runs here where, guys get them and they're home runs. They're no doubters. But I don't feel it's a game where if guys are hitting front foot curveballs that they should be hitting home runs. That's just not the way it goes. So for me, that's the biggest difference. I don't think the ball, is all that different.
Is there a lot of pressure on you not to give up a run early on in the game? Because, if you guys get behind, then it's tough to come back.
It's just the way the game's played over here. You see so many games that the team that scores first, holds on and wins. You see a lot of, 1-0, 2-1 games here, and that's just the way it's played. Like I said, that can be for various reasons based on strike zones, balls, you can talk about whatever, but you see a lot more low scoring games over here than you're used to at home. So yeah, you obviously give up runs early, you're gonna be struggling to win the game. So it's definitely, I wouldn't say it's pressure, but it's definitely in your mind.
I keep complaining that it seems like guys or teams can't hit their way out of trouble, and that the game is coming down to little plays and smaller plays, and how close you keep a runner on at first, and how good your left fielder's arm is. And you guys feel the same way about the games being close every night?
Yeah, like I said, there's you're not pitching in too many 5-0 games or 6-2 games. You just don't see it. It's kind of fun. I feel like it's a I like pitching in games like that. It's great to pitch with a 5-run lead. No, don't get me wrong, but at the same time, you definitely have to make pitches in situations. You have to pay more attention to the running game, and it's definitely a different style than what we've come to. But at the same time, you learn to adjust, and that's what the situation is. So you deal with it.
All right. How do you see this Central League playoff race playing out?
It's still too early to say. There's a lot of teams in this league. I think it can be very even. I think it's going to come down to who gets hot at the end. Last year, the Swallows and Giants were strong, and then Chunichi went on a run there at the end that nobody could beat them. So it's just going to be staying in the mix, here the first half, and then hopefully stay healthy, and whoever can put that run together at the end is probably going to take it.
All right, buddy. Well, good luck. Thanks a lot for joining us on the show.
Yes.
Bye bye. All right. Well, Brian, thank you again for taking the time just before game time to give us a few minutes there. Much appreciated. So, the Carp, he talked about the rotation there, but what caught your ear? What was the thing that stood out for you in his conversation?
Well, first of all, it seems, I talking about the Giants, and, they got to me once or twice, nothing special. We didn't put up any runs. Well, gee, what a shock playing with the Carp. Do I get to repeat how often I've told people over the last 10 years what a lousy offense the Carp have? They still have, they're going to have. It doesn't matter really where you play. They have a bad offense. They had a bad offense in Shimin Chucho, and they just scored a lot of runs because of where they played. And the problem was they gave up so many runs. Now that they play in a good pitcher's park, they don't give up a lot of runs, and they score nothing.
Yeah.
So, getting runs for the Carp is kind of the problem for all the pitchers. It's not like something that is unique to Brian Bullington.
Yeah, they can all sue for lack of support. But, yeah, Kenta Maeda, we know he's a Sawamura Award winner.
Sure.
Yuya Fukui was good for them last year as a rookie. Right. This year, the rookie Yusuke Nomura is really good.
Yep.
Junpei Shinoda is a guy who's been up and down. He kind of had a breakout moment early on last season. He's probably been average about since then. Then Bullington and then Kan Otake. They also have their version of Yuki Saito, who isn't pitching very well and is down on the farm, but they have pitching. The Carp are not going to struggle on the mound.
Right. Well,
until late game situations.
Okay, well, this is something where the new park is helping them, because it used to be a situation where the pitchers picked up bad habits playing in Shimin Kyujo because they tried to pitch away from everybody, and it didn't really help, because you really have to be able to locate your fastball inside there and get people on both sides of the plate so you can locate it inside so you can get them outside.
Mm-hmm.
And as Kuroda mentioned this to me a few years ago when I interviewed him, and it took him 3 or 4 years to get used to that. But a lot of guys aren't good enough to make that adjustment, you know, to you know, get their heads beaten in while they learn to do what they need to win at Shining Kyujo. Mm-hmm. And I think that playing in a pitcher-friendly park is makes a big difference. It allows these guys to develop and, you know, and get away with some of their mistakes while they, you know, they start fine-tuning. The pitching for the Carp is now a matter of fine-tuning as opposed to relearning how to pitch.
Right. Well, Bulletin said, you know, and he seemed like he was optimistic. He said, yeah, we know they don't score a lot, but we think we can right that ship and we can do more things to be a little bit more aggressive on the base pads and do something to help that out and help our guys out. And that'll help us score more runs as we go. But Dennis Sarfati, the closer, was not very optimistic. And he's like, yeah, you know, basically, I don't know how we're going to get runs. And they stuck with a lineup that's full of slap and run guys.
Right.
And they have, you know, Nick Stabenoa is in the middle of the lineup. And they just lost Kenta Kurihara for the year. It looks like he's going to have Tommy John surgery on his elbow, and he's going to be gone for a while. And they actually, one of the guys, I can't remember who it was, said he probably should have had the operation last year because he wasn't right last year.
Okay.
And if he'd have had that last year, he'd be back and be able to compete like his usual self. Because remember, we talked about the fact that he only had 16 hits and they were all singles this year.
Okay.
And yeah.
Well, that's what he does normally in the first half of the season anyway. But
right. Unfortunately, they don't score a lot of runs, so they need that pitching staff.
And although I think we have to, I think one of the things he mentioned, which was very interesting to me, and I in fact, never heard it come out of the mouth of a pitcher.
Mm-hmm. I know where you're going.
You know where I'm going, okay, which is I'm going home. It's where the home plate umpire sits. And I don't know if Brian has pitcher's union insurance that will absolve him from excommunicable offenses, because he's going to get kicked out of the pitcher's union for saying the umpires call both pitches that aren't strikes, that are out of the strike zone.
Yeah.
And my experience here in Japan is the pitchers say the umpires call the zone, and the batters say they call the zone plus the next guy's zone.
Twilight zone.
Exactly. They call my zone plus, you know, plus alpha, as they say in Japan, you know, sort of the add-on. I don't know how they factor that into it, but they make it bigger and bigger. So
yeah, well, I love what he said about the strike zone. And when he said it, he looked, you know, he's 6'3". He looks down at me and he says it with this big grin on his face. Like, you know, I'm living off of it. But you know what? You have to have the control to exploit that. Okay, you can't just say I'm going to hit some places off the plate, off the black, and get
balls.
Well,
yeah, that's true. That's true. I mean, but that's the same for anybody. I mean, that's the same for everything. I mean, if you have two guys in one hat, two guys who have the same, essentially the same movement on their pitches and the same velocity, the guy who can hit his spots is going to be more effective regardless of whether the strike zone's the size of a mailbox or it's the size of the side of a barn.
Well, therein lies the problem. Every time those guys go to the mound, they don't go with their best stuff, and sometimes they can't control everything, and that's what the problem is with starting pitchers is,
well,
you know, one day they have something working and then the next thing it's not working.
That's the problem with every pitcher. But what I'm saying is, for people to say, well, the strike zone is bigger. This is, I heard this when Mets scout Isao Ojimi told me that he tried to convince me that when the major leagues increased their strike zone, that Mr. Komiyama, how come I can't remember his first name right now?
Our pitcher who went to the Mets?
Stars, went back to the Marines, and he's a great guy. Anyway, he has pinpoint control. He doesn't throw. He keeps his velocity down, but he's basically a location guy. And Ojimi tried to convince me. He tried to argue that he would be more effective because of the larger major league strike zone, because of his control would allow him to exploit it. And that is true. But when you increase the size of the strike zone, everybody gets more effective.
Yeah, Satoru.
Satoru Komiyama, correct.
Okay. Yeah, okay.
Everybody gets more effective, but the people who get the most effective are the people with the most movement on their pitches who have trouble hitting a small strike zone.
Well, yes and yes. No. I mean, those guys,
No, I heard your first no.
The problem with those guys is they never know where the ball's going. Okay, I'm talking about the guys who can exploit it by hitting the same spot over and over and over.
Those guys are going to be effective if the strike zone's 3 inches by 6 inches.
Yeah, they're going to be effective. But I think essentially what Brian is saying is that it's better for guys who are maybe on the mediocre side, and it's making them better.
Exactly. That's what I'm saying.
Okay. The
bigger
you have to be good enough to exploit that. If you're not good enough,
you're not even on the mound. So that's, we just take those guys out. I mean, that's like saying it's going to make me better. It ain't going to make me any better.
Well, I mean, I saw Mr. Sosa throwing today. This was Sunday in the game against the Bay Stars, and he doesn't know where the ball is going to end up. He's just letting it fly. He has a lot of velocity, and he's using that to get guys out. But he's just letting it go. He has no more idea or control over it where it's going than the catcher does. He's just trying to catch it.
So what I'm saying is, okay, it's basically this. You're like arguing two different sides of the same point. You're arguing both sides. The point is that a bigger strike zone makes everybody more effective. But the people it really makes, the people who gain the most, are the people who can't hit a little tiny strike zone. Guys have got pinpoint control. It's not going to help them that the strike zone is much bigger. It's not going to help them as much as the guys who have too much movement and lack the command. Those guys, when you give them a big strike zone, they go to town. And now I'll tell you what, and the evidence of this is what happened in the major leagues in the early 60s. As soon as they made the strike zone, they increased the size of the strike zone in 1962.
Mm-hmm.
The guys, everybody got better. But the guys who got the most innings were big power pitchers whose control was secondary to the velocity, because these guys could not have to worry about pinpointing every pitch. They can just hum it. These are the guys who started the Don Drysdale's a great example. Dick Raddatz, really big power pitchers. They ran the guys who were the finesse pitchers. Yeah, their ERAs went down, but they lost innings to the power pitchers. So, yeah, they were better, but the power pitchers gained more. And that's what I'm saying is, yeah, it helps you to have a big strike zone if you have pinpoint control. Then you know, if they're calling strikes out of the zone, if you have pinpoint control. But if you have pinpoint control, you're going to be able to get by when the strike zone's any size.
Okay. I mean, I understand what you're saying, and yeah, you might be right. I might be arguing a little bit on both sides, so that's fine. But I think a guy like Bulletin, he did well last year.
Right.
He's doing about the same, I think, ERA wise.
And he wasn't here before the strike zone changed.
Right.
And before the ball changed.
Right. And I think he's going to do well with these conditions because he doesn't overpower people. And if he starts to, you know, if he gets his command in order and starts hitting spots regularly, he's going to be great. But I don't see that happening either.
I don't see it happening either. 2.39 ERA sounds like a team ERA.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It sounds ordinary. Yeah. And right now the runs are going to score more as the season goes on. And the weather warms up,
right?
And they start playing more of these, these little tiny local ballparks.
Yeah. Well, as soon as I started complaining about, teams, can go down by four runs and then the game's over. I think the next day there was a team that went down by four runs. I think it was the Buffaloes, and they came back and won with a walk off on a 5-4 game. So I'm not saying that.
How many runs the Bay Stars scored there? 14.
12. Don't exaggerate.
Okay. No, I'm not exaggerating. I'm asking.
It was 12, yeah. Well, yeah, they had a good day.
I would exaggerate if I knew the number.
I'm so happy for them, though. I'm glad they won. But that we'll save that for later. I did want to continue talking about the fact that the Carp just don't score runs, because I talked to Nomura before the game, and he was saying that once they get a runner to third with one out, and because they haven't been scoring a lot of runs, it seems like people are like screaming for them to squeeze. And yeah. he gets asked a lot of questions about squeezes. And before the game, he said, well, through the first 25 games of this yeah. season,
yeah.
there have been 8 squeezes already. There were 12 all the last year, he said.
In
successful squeeze.
In NPB?
In the Central League.
Oh, in the Central League. Okay.
And more and more we're hearing. I don't know. I can't say it's the ball. I mean, I did complain about the ball.
Bollinger
brings up the good point about the strike zone. Yeah, that is an adjustment. That is an adjustment. But Bollinger brings up the thing about the strike zone. But to carry on from last week where I was making the argument that something's going on, if you remember at the beginning of the season, the Giants opened up with a franchise record worst, what was it, 10 or 15 games without hitting a home run to
right.
start the season. The Buffaloes did the same thing, franchise record, club record, without hitting a home run to start the season. The Tigers uh-huh. recently went through a 15-game stretch without hitting a home run. I think they uh-huh. went on Saturday.
Uh-huh.
Going into Friday's game, the Carp pitch hitter extraordinaire, Tomonori Maeda, he had 11 at-bats the whole season, you know, 11 at-bats and 8 RBIs, and that was tied for the club lead.
Okay.
Now, that says that he's a very successful pinch hitter, of course, with guys on base, but it also says
they come
that
MVP driving, candidate.
No one's driving in runs. Nah, that's not the point. The point is that they don't score runs and nobody's driving them in for them. And all these things, whether it's the strike zone, the combination of the strike zone and the ball and all that stuff, I just think, you know,
I don't see any difference from last year. I don't think.
And they're squeezing more.
Well, that's an adjustment.
Yeah, that's why I think that's what they have to do. But
the
other adjustment I've seen is there've been more guys, and I don't have numbers to support it, but I've seen more guys thrown out on the bases. They're just saying, hey, look, we don't know what's going to happen. Let's send a guy home, or let's send him to third, or let's try to get him to the next base. And let's take the chance. Let's make the defense throw us out because
is an adjustment because, you know, last year at this time we were talking about how come the teams aren't adjusting.
Mm-hmm.
How come they're not running more? And particularly we were talking about the Hiroshima Carp. You know, they got all these guys that can fly and they were getting on base, but they weren't doing anything once they got on base. They
yeah.
were, you know, waiting for the home runs that weren't going to happen.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Not happening is a lot of when you watch a Carp game, there's not much really happening because they pitch so well too. They stay in every game and I don't know that they can, you know, Brian said a team's made runs in the second half of last season and that's what's going to push, the team this year to whatever team it is to the championship. Mm-hmm. But that's if your team can stay that close. I mean, Chinichi made its run to the top spot. That team was in third place. I think they mm-hmm. dropped down to fourth place for an instant last year.
Okay.
Sometime in August. But then, you know, everybody was still pretty close.
Okay.
They made a run. I don't know if the Carp are going to be around there the way they're losing games at the pace they're at now.
Well, last year, oddly enough, they started very well. And what happens, I would say it happens every year.
Interleague.
It happened. Marty Brown adjusted to that pretty well after a couple of years but a lot of the managers are really shocked. The foreign managers, particularly, are shocked at how tough interleague is on their guys, and the foreign managers have to make major adjustments to that.
Interleague.
I know it's a horror. It's a little shop of horrors, baby.
Well, he said the same thing. He said their play dropped off in interleague. And I talked to Dennis Sarfate about that too. And I said,
right.
Well, okay. It seems like this is more of a pitcher's league now. And the pitching environment is geared to more success on preventing runs each game. How do you guys think you're going to fare against the Pacific League? And he said, you know, we have to score runs. I mean, he's a closer. I mean, he wants to come in with a lead and protect it. And I understand. And
well, he won't be coming in with a lead if they don't have a lead.
That's exactly the point. So I think, you know, he knows they have to score runs for him to get some work in, and he's hoping they can do it. But I don't know if they're going to be in striking range. I hope they are. Nope. I mean, with all those young pitchers, I like all their young pitchers, and it looks like they're going to be good for years to come. They've got guys who can be, you know, obviously Kenta Maeda already won a Sophomore Award. I interviewed him as well. I'll be writing a story this week, hopefully.
Nice.
And Yuya Fukui is good, although he hasn't been that good this season, but I think he just needs to make some adjustments. And then Yusuke,
okay,
Nomura looks really good for a rookie, and I think their rotation is outstanding. They can match up with anybody. Okay. Now I'll let you introduce your milestone man from the Yakult Swallows.
Well, we've talked about him so much, it seems like almost anticlimactic that Shinya Miyamoto got his 2,000th hit. I guess the story behind that is it took him the same number of games as it took Inaba.
Yeah, isn't that amazing?
His former teammate, who are, I think now they are they're fairly high up on the list of how few games it took to get there.
Yeah, they were drafted the same time. They came in the
although obviously Miyamoto is a few years older because they both went to college and then Miyamoto played corporate league ball for a few years.
Right.
So anyway, yeah, that was quite amazing and quite impressive.
Congratulations to him.
Miyamoto paid a lot of tribute to Katsuya Nomura and helping him be the player he was, their former manager with the Swallows. And of course, I mentioned before that Inaba credited Nomura with putting a bug up his butt about his defense, because when he came to turn pro, Nomura wouldn't play him in the outfield because he couldn't play.
Right.
So,
the funny story about Miyamoto getting the 2,000th hit was I was covering, they were all day games on Thursday, and I looked at the schedule and I'm like, okay, I'm going to go to Yokohama when I looked at the schedule early on. Of course, that morning I woke up in gray skies and it was raining, and I looked at the weather report and all that stuff, and I thought, okay, well, there's not going to be any game in Yokohama. I'm going to Tokyo Dome where it's safe and dry. So I get there, and I keep looking at my iPhone and waiting for them to rain, how the TBS site shows that it's a rainout, and I kept waiting for that rainout thing to pop up, and it just didn't. And I was talking to the other reporters, and I said, oh, they're going to play this game, and that guy's going to get the hit, and I'm going to be – they're going to yell at me, and they're going to say, why did you go to that game when you should have been out in Yokohama? He didn't get the hit, and the next day at the office, I was able to write the story for the paper then, and we put a big picture in it. So it worked out for me.
Okay.
But, the thing about him is he's a very non-spectacular player, and now he's among the greatest in the game. It's really strange.
The transformation.
I don't know that it's a transformation. I think it's contradictory.
Right.
Because he's not one of those standout players who, the first thing, he's not anymore. He was when he was a really fine shortstop. You would look at him defensively and say, wow, that guy is special. And he's not that anymore, but he plays great defensively. We talked about his footwork and everything on shows last year, and talked about the good defensive play that he made earlier this season, and
yep.
He's unbelievable. But, he's just not that spectacular a player, but there he is with the guys, who go down in history.
Yeah, he's not that spectacular of a player, but he does a lot of things. He just does so many things right. So it is hard to fault that. And you've got to give him credit for being so smart and making so many good plays. It's kind of a tribute to, how far you can, how far you can go when you don't look spectacular.
Yes. Now, a couple of notes.
Because the answer is, it's not about looking spectacular. It's about winning games.
That is correct. That is correct. A couple of notes on that. Now, his 59 home runs among the 2,000 hits were the fewest, and that was fewer than Hiromasa Arai, who's now the Oryx Farm skipper. He's the skipper on the Nigun team.
Yep.
And he only batted 300 in a season six times in the 17-plus years. And you can make the argument that because he was considered so valuable defensively, it forced Yakult to put him out there all the time to get all those at-bats to actually get to 2,000 hits, because he's such a value on the defensive side.
Well,
your thoughts.
Yeah. Well, they did need a shortstop when he came up, because they had a big power hitter who had been a good shortstop for a number of years, but he was Takahiro Ikeyama.
Mm-hmm.
But they really needed to get him to third base, because his wheels were getting bad, and he needed to play third base and not shortstop. And so they really needed somebody to play there, and they had a guy who could go pick him. He's not the fastest guy, but he plays the position well. He plays the position. He gets the outs. He's not going to stun you or knock you over with his defense. He's solid. He's a car. He's like
a dog.
You know, He wins. Yeah, he's the Sherman Tank of the NPB. You know, he's not better in terms of what he brings to the game, in terms of the raw power or the raw speed or the design. The thing is that he's just very dependable.
Right.
He's always there. He doesn't break down.
Yep.
And so he's out there playing, and other people are in the trainer's room, or other people are not making the plays because they were out of position, and he was there. It's about a lot of little things, and that's what he does. So credit to that, and yeah, one for the people who go out there and keep plugging away.
Well, that's what he said after the game in the hero interview. He said, "Thank you to my parents. They gave me a small body, but it's very durable."
Okay.
And the last note was that he was at 41 years and 4 months. He's the oldest player to reach 2,000 hits, and he replaced who?
Inaba.
No, Hiromitsu Ochiai was the.
Oh, okay.
Was the oldest before that. So.
Who was, as we mentioned, he would have been the second player to play in corporate league ball after graduating from university, but he didn't graduate from university.
Right. Check that. Ochiai was 41 years and 4 months. Miyamoto did it at 41 years, 5 months. So there's a 1 month difference. And speaking of old guys, I wanted to talk about Masahiro Yamamoto.
Oh, okay. I thought you were going to talk about me.
And
I'm not playing baseball, so I don't count.
Well, I'm not going to put myself in your category because I'm not quite as old yet. So
I'm for left-handed, so you can't put me. In fact, you're not as old as Yamamoto either.
Yeah, I am.
Are you?
I'm a year older than he is.
Oh. And you don't look it, though.
Neither does he.
That's
yeah, I should still be out there playing basketball. Anyway, I was writing this, and I was getting ready for the show, and he had pitched so well, Yamamoto had for the Dragons, and his ERA was 0.55, and he'd had 3 quality starts in the last 4 outings, and blah, 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 blah. And then today he gets there's gray matter on the field. His brains were beaten out, essentially. I mean.
Oh.
His ERA went from 0.55 to 1.5 essentially after one game. Yeah, routine's a full run, but now he's still doing remarkably well. What's that?
He's up there with the Brian Bullingtons in the middle of the pack now.
Yeah, well, no, he's still a full run behind or in front of Brian, but I was thinking that he might be able to get pitcher of the month for the Central League because he had the lowest ERA and I was going to make this case that he had it, but he's not going to get it now because the thing that he didn't have was the wins to go with.
It's not a matter of he ain't going to get it now because it's May. It doesn't matter.
That's true. I didn't think about that. But I think they're going to make the announcement on Monday.
Yeah, so that's not going to enter into it.
Well, that's good. Well,
but it's not a question of who's, as you know, it's not really a question of who's the better pitcher.
Yeah, what is the question?
The question is, why don't they have a better system? And the answer is, well, this is easy and nobody's complaining about it other than a bunch of irritating foreigners. So let's just leave it.
Yeah, which means they don't know. They don't. What did Kanemura say about Trey Hillman before? He doesn't understand. He's a foreign manager, so.
Yeah, he can't really talk to him. He doesn't know what's going on.
So maybe that's what they think about us, is that, well, geez, they form people they like to complain.
Sure. Well, okay, so now the question is this, why don't they consider the whole performance? That would be like, well, that's, making things kind of difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, you have to put the entire thing.
I think we're supposed to just do the easy thing.
Pick these two numbers, and then that's the best guy, and he had the best month.
Wins and ERAs. And so, okay, we'll eliminate everybody who doesn't have at least 3 wins, and we'll eliminate anybody who doesn't have a ERA in the month under 2, and there you go. And then we got a bunch of candidates, and we'll roll the dice.
Yeah. Well, the problem with him was that he only had 2 wins, and there were other pitchers with 4 wins, so I didn't think he'd get it in terms of the wins. But, he had so many 1-2-3 innings, almost every start was a quality start. I think they pulled him out of his first start because they were afraid that something was going to go wrong with him at 46 years and whatever months old he was. I thought they just didn't give him a chance to keep pitching, but he was pitching well. Only today was the bad day, the way he had the bad start. So.
Well, this is hopefully his season will be better than Kimiyasu Kudo's last season with the Giants.
It's already better than that, so.
No, Kudo was a house on fire, oddly enough, until, I think he was 3-0. And the thing with Kudo was, we'll go back to the backstory here, is I'd done a long interview with him before the season started, and we were going to make it our Giants special. And then for one reason, to make a long story short, we didn't run the Giants special, and I was going to save this long interview for the first game he won after his birthday, which was May 5th.
Mm-hmm.
And he never won another game for the Giants. He got hurt at the start of May, and that was it. Sayonara, see you later. How do you like playing in Yokohama, dude?
Yeah, well, I don't know. I don't remember him.
Hopefully, that won't be any. That won't be. He won't fall into that. They might have been at the same age.
Yeah, I don't remember him having an ERA around a half a run through six or
five
starts.
That's
but
because nobody had an ERA half a run.
Okay, well, that's. Yamamoto hadn't been giving up base runners. He hadn't been walking guys. He hadn't been giving up very many hits. So, but the thing about him that stands out to me, because remember he recently surpassed Shigeru Sugishita for the club record in wins with 212. And when he did that, I just remember when I started covering the Dragons in 1995. I saw some of his games at Nagoya Stadium.
Okay.
And then when they moved into the dome, the seats, as you know, are right behind home plate, so you get a really good view. And he was throwing about 135, 136 on his fastball, and then, you know, all the other junk. No, Yamamoto Masa, come on.
I was going to say, I see him around the park sometimes, but I don't think he's going to crank it up. He might get 120 now and then. But
stop it. You're just being silly now. So the thing I remember about Yamamoto Masa is, and the thing that I see today, even when I see him pitch, he's still at the same. I mean, he might have lost a couple kilometers off of that fastball and it's down to 134, but it's the same stuff, the same motion.
Much.
Yeah, well, you don't see it much, but it's the same motion, the same. Everything's the same, and that's why he's such a marvel to me to be able to do this. I mean, even Kudo made adjustments and everything, and he stopped throwing hard. Velocity went down, but everything. I mean, Yamamoto Masa's never been a hard thrower. He's just, he's just there, and it's just the same.
Well, Tom House credits gives himself credit for some of. He said one of the things that helped Yamamoto take a step forward and win his Sawamura Award was being taught the Emery ball by a former major league pitching coach, Tom House. You know, learning how to scuff it with his belt buckle, and which he denies. Not Tom House, but Yamamoto denies that.
Well, maybe we have to collect some of the balls that are used, like they did with Mike Scott.
I'm not going anywhere near those used balls.
Yes. All right. On that note, we will just say that he's with a manager. The good thing is, with a manager, is only half his age.
No, I mean
twice his age. I'm sorry.
Twice his age. Okay.
And so he's an old school manager who lets his guys stay in, you know, late. So he'll get some chances in some close games to decide, you know, whether he's going to be the winner or loser in those games. So that's good for him, possibly.
Okay.
And,
now,
well, we'll see how that works out for the Dragons.
Right. Now, what talking about the, you know, I was thinking about where Yamamoto stands on the all-time list of old guys.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, he's pushing 47 years old,
mm-hmm.
and his 37 innings this season are third most by a player over 45 years of age in Japan. Although the next time he pitches, he'll pass Kimiyasu Kudo's 37 and a third, and he'll pull into second place. Now, the leader, the all-time leader for overage pitchers.
Overage, he says.
I don't know what.
Elder statesman.
was a guy who pitched until he was nearly 49.
Jamie Moyer.
Shinji Hamazaki. Hall of Famer Shinji Hamazaki. Who is a Hall of Famer despite playing just a couple of years. He's kind of a pivotal person in amateur ball and for a variety of things that went on. He was a manager and did just everything. He's kind of an interesting character. Anyway, Hamazaki's record is 60 and two-thirds innings when I think he was 48 years old. In fact, Hamazaki, who was a reliever for he was the reliever manager of the Hankyu Braves for a few years. He didn't, he was an amateur before the Second World War,
mm-hmm.
and he turned pro in the middle of the 1947 season after he was repatriated from Manchuria.
Wow.
the Soviets kept the Japanese citizens and soldiers to do work in the Far East and in Siberia for a number of years. And he was in China working for the Soviets. Okay, he comes back anyway. 1945, he gets recruited by Hankyu to be their new manager, and he's also a relief pitcher. And he was, at that time, he became the oldest rookie in Japanese history, which he still was, at the age of 45.
Wow.
And then the following year, he became the oldest player to win a game. He's also the oldest player with a hit, an RBI, a double, triple, and a stolen base. So take that, Masahiro Yamamoto.
Yeah, you got some more work to do, youngster.
Okay, well, if he steals a base, they're going to need to bring out the cart, you know, the defibrillator.
If he steals a base, it's just like I always say, he needs a gun and a mask.
Okay, but because of his crooked left arm, he's not going to fool anybody. They'll know who it is. Okay, now as far as the oldest position player, that was Yoshiyuki Iwamoto, who holds the record for homering, being the oldest player to hit a home run in Japan when he's 45 years, 5 months. You know, that's not far away from where Miyamoto is, so he might break that record. Iwamoto was an outfielder. Okay, I'm about finished, Jerry. Iwamoto was an outfielder. However, in his last season with the Toei Flyers, Iwamoto, who is also in the Hall of Fame, caught the only 2 games of his career when the Flyers' regular catcher was hurt.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, that's the old guys. And the almost as old as Iwamoto was Katsuya Nomura, who we've mentioned. Mm-hmm. And I did want to, we'll get to that a little bit later. Okay. Anyway, that is that for that.
All right, a couple injury notes I wanted to mention before we get to the questions. Kazuki Yoshimi, the ace of the Chunichi Dragons, and then Daryl Rasner, the closer for the Rakuten Eagles, and Makoto Kaneko of the Nippon Ham Fighters, all deactivated. Hope they all get back soon. Yeah. All right, let's go to fielding questions. All right, the first is a comment that comes to us from Dave McNeely. He says, I thought that Jim's story the other day about the Mei Kyukai adding the 96 hits that Hiromi Matsunaga got in the Masters League to his MPB totals to get him to 2,000 hits sounded very interesting, and I was thinking that maybe it would make a good story for Card of the Week on my blog. The one problem that I ran into about it was that I can't find anything that substantiates it. The Mei Kyukai website doesn't list Matsunaga as a member, and I haven't found any online biographies of Matsunaga, admittedly I'm limited to English ones, that mention this story. So I'm curious as to where this story comes from.
Well, it comes from Wikipedia, which is pretty much the font of all misinformation at sometimes, although, you know, we tend to live on Wikipedia. Mm-hmm. They mentioned him, so I don't quite know what that source is. But it took me some time of tweaking my browser to get a setting that would work to read the Mei Kyukai website. And having looked at it, no, Matsunaga is not there. The Wikipedia is kind of an interesting story because David Neely mentions that there are...
McNeely. Other, I'm sorry.
Excuse me. What? Pardon?
It's David McNeely.
Oh, well, you should write McNeely on the page then, John.
I really need to do that, yes.
You nearly do it. Okay. Okay, well, David McNeely mentioned that. The players born before the Showa era, and I believe with who qualified with the proper number of hits and so on, did not make the list, and I believe there are 7.
Mm-hmm.
7 of those, including Tetsuharu Kawakami, the legendary Giants manager, who was a 2,000-hit guy. And Kawakami is interesting, as he's one of the 2 players in Japanese baseball history with 2,000 hits and at least 1 pitching win. And the question is, who's the other guy? He is currently active. Dun, 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 dun.
That's it? That's all you're going to give me? He's currently active?
He's an infielder.
I have no idea.
And the answer is Takuro Ishii, who began his career out of high school as a undrafted high school pitcher.
Wow.
And he won a game before his pitching career ended. Okay, so he's the current active leader in hits.
Yes, so, I think we talked about that in last year's programs, yeah.
Okay. All right. Now, so, well, there's a couple other things about the Make You guy.
So, yeah, basically you Wikipedia is the source, though, that you
use. Yeah, so we don't know. But the other thing interesting about the Make You guy is there's one guy who never joined the Make You guy, and that's Hiramitsu Ochiai, because one of the big wheels in the Make You guy was Masaichi Kaneda, Japan's all-time wins leader. And Kaneda was Ochiai's former manager, who spent much of his career saying that Ochiai would never get a hit because he didn't know how to – his batting stance was all wrong for Japanese pro baseball.
No.
And Ochiai said, basically, instead of the Groucho Marx line, he doesn't want to be a club – he's suspicious of any club that would want him as a member. He didn't want to join a club that had Kaneda as a member.
Wow.
So he never joined.
And that's why I love the guy. He doesn't just march to the beat of his own drummer. He grabs the drum and beats it himself.
Sure.
He is just one of a kind, man. That's beautiful. If that guy is part of your group, I'm not part of your group.
Exactly.
Get the heck out of here and don't come back.
Okay.
All right.
So thanks for the question, David.
Thank you.
The comment.
Our next question is from Michael Westbay.
Hey there, guys. Michael Westbay here. Always enjoy the show. I've got a question about what's going on the other side of this pond here. It seems that Darvish has now won Rookie of the Month award for April, but I was under the impression that Japanese veteran players who cross over to the major leagues were no longer to be considered shinjin or rookies. Is this the case?
Okay, thank you very much, Michael. Well, yeah. You want to start or should I? I mean,
I've heard this constant debate about not letting the Japanese veterans become rookies in the majors, but as far as I know, it's never been more than one of those things they drag out and they say, oh, you know, we should pay respect to what they've done before, and but it's too much trouble to change the rules, so let's forget about it.
Yeah, I don't understand the debate on it. And it's simply because my position is this. Guys like Hideo Nomo, who won in 95, and Kazuhiro Sasaki, who won in 2000, and Ichiro Suzuki, who won in 2001, when they go over there and play on major league rosters, there are no limits to how many imports you can have. No one says you can only have two, or you can only have two from this country, or you can only do this.
Right.
And that. There are no limits. And because there are no limits, and they're ostensibly they're gathering the best players in the world who can play, who have never played in the major leagues before. So this is a different level.
Right.
They're rookies. It's the first time they played there. I don't care where you played in it. I don't care if you had the 45-year-old rookie before you talk about, who was it, Hamazaki?
Shinji Hamazaki.
Yeah, I don't care if it's him. He's never played on that level before. He's a rookie. And because it's like I said, they have no limits. Now,
well,
people might disagree with me, but that's my feeling about it.
I think that's a fair one. And there's, of course, the precedent, which is that the National League Rookie of the Year from 1949, the first year, well, actually, at that point, it was the Major League Rookie of the Year. Rookie of the Year award was dominated for about 10 years by Negro League players. So the precedent is there. Of course, once there were no longer any Negro leagues, then we had a different dynamic.
Right. Well,
so yeah. I don't know. I think the Rookie of the Year is kind of a silly award anyway, because you basically
silly?
Need sure because you need a slide rule to figure it out.
Well,
and
silly.
Every year it changes who's eligible. They're constantly tweaking it. Nobody really knows. I mean, Al Rosen had this year when. He hit 40 some odd home runs for the Cleveland Indians in his first regular playing time, but because of some loophole or some other such thing, he wasn't considered a rookie at the time. Now, I mean, he is a rookie of the year by the standards of most years the award has been handed out,
right.
But he wasn't a rookie at that time. So it's always difficult to figure out who's a rookie, whether he's got 10 at-bats or 11 at-bats or 27 at-bats on Thursdays or whatever.
Plate appearances or whatever. Well,
whatever. Or he has been in pro baseball too long, but he's in the minor leagues. Or you know, that here's another, well, okay, I won't even get into it. So, yeah, take the Rookie of the Year award, throw it in the garbage. I'll be fine. Except it's fun to write about. It gives us something to write about in the off season. So, hey, keep it.
Well, the rules clearly state that foreign players are considered rookies no matter how much success, you know, they played, or how much success they had in their native land or other lands. So, some might disagree with the definition, and I believe some writers out there say, well, this guy's not a rookie. I don't think he's a rookie. He's 28 or 29 or 30, and he's played in Japan or wherever for too long. I'm not going to vote for him. And that's their prerogative, apparently.
Well, I think, yeah, on the other hand, I think that's a case of, well, no, if he is eligible, here's another one. If a guy is eligible to vote and the rules explicitly say you have to consider them because you have to consider everybody who's eligible, and to come out and say, I'm not going to consider them because, A, I don't think that's what the rules should be, then you really should exclude yourself from the voting and shouldn't vote for anybody.
Well, I don't know how far these guys take it. I don't know if they just disagree mildly and they vote for them to finish third place in the voting and give them a third place vote. I don't know how it works. Voting works.
Well, that's the actually in the MVP voting it says that if you don't want to consider players who are eligible for who are expressly eligible and you refuse to consider them for one reason or another, you have to exclude yourself from the voting.
Yeah.
But nobody does.
Yeah, and I was going to say that's not going to happen.
It says why they would never consider a pitcher.
I
don't think pitchers are really the best players in the game, but the most valuable players in the game, but you have to consider them.
Yeah. Well, I think Darvish is going to get a lot of consideration, not just because of the way he pitches, but because he's going to end up with a lot of wins. I think I mentioned that on the podcast when we talked about him moving over and that he was going to the Rangers, and we broke down their defense. We also said that they have a really strong offense and that they're going to be scoring a lot of runs.
You break down their defense. It's already broken.
Yeah, you can't. If it's already broke, just get a new one. But, you know, the one thing is I was listening to a more famous podcast on Major League Baseball that's out every day by ESPN that I won't mention the name. And they talked about how most of the stadiums that Darvish pitched in Japan were domes. So we want to dispel some of those. I mean, he didn't pitch in a dome every day. And certainly it's cooler in these domes, but they can't cool them off to the degree where, you know, it's like, you know, playing in a finely refrigerated or perfectly refrigerated environment. It's hot. And they also mentioned the fact that they think he's going to melt in the Texas heat and wilt and all this stuff. And he's pitched in a lot of parks outdoor. It's summer. It's hot. It's humid here in Japan, too. He's going to be fine. He's not going to melt out there in the mountain. You have to go out there.
Well, I got news for people who think all domes are cool, because anybody Cebu Dome in the summer has never been to the world's, and I think it's actually in the Guinness Book of World Records as the world's largest outdoor sauna.
Yeah, it should be.
When it gets really hot inside, although the sides are open, there's no air conditioning, and the air creates a kind of a heat bubble. The roof of the dome traps the hot air. And it's only occasionally you'll be on the field and a breeze will come along that'll occasionally puncture that and send a breeze through the park. But that's
usually a butterfly flapping its wings trying to get itself cool. creates a breeze. I mean, there's no breeze in there, man. There's nothing.
No, when it gets hot, the breeze doesn't come in. The air pressure inside is so much higher than the air pressure outside that it just doesn't move, and it's hot and stifling. Although, fortunately, I've never seen it as bad as it was the first time they played an All-Star game, which was horrendous.
So anyway, people, yeah, he's not going to melt. You don't have to treat him like a ballerina or anything. He's going to be fine. He knows what heat is. He's pitched in it before.
How many ballerinas are 6'3" with little goatees?
I don't know, but those are the kind they act like they're going to break. Well, he's a black swan of those guys. So
swan. He's a swan of color.
You got to see the movie, dude.
Oh, I guess. Okay.
You got to see the movie. All right.
I got to see the movie.
You got to see it. All right. Well, thank you both for the comments. Thank you, Michael, for the MP3 file. And anyone else who's interested, you can send us an MP3 file so we can play it on the show, and we'll address your comments or questions.
And we get to listen to you.
And it's awesome. And so do other listeners get to listen to you. So keep it under a minute and send it to us by email to yakyujohn@gmail.com, and we'll get it on the show.
All right. Well, and thank you very much.
You can also send us a note on our Facebook page and leave us a comment there, and look for us on iTunes. Good job, Jim. Thanks a lot, man.
Thank you, John. Thanks to everyone for listening. It's coming to a screeching halt within the next 10 days or so.
All right, and then we'll make a big announcement next week.
Oh, well, you can tell everybody already. I mean, it's already official. It's already public.
It's already public. Well, you make the announcement then.
Okay. As some of you know, I've been a baseball writer at the Daily O'Meary since 2002, where I went to work in 1999. I had a column there for close to 13 years. But, all good things must come to an end, and I will be writing baseball and doing similar kind of work for Kyoto Tsushinsha, Kyoto News, starting the 16th of May. So hopefully some of you will see the things I write there. And thank you to everybody in the Daily O'Meary for making me feel so welcome and so at home for the last 13 years.
Thank you, buddy, man. I'm going to miss you.
I've seen better crying in nursery school.
Well, I can't do my real fake cry right now, Mark.
You'd scare the children.
Yeah, come on now. But I mean, you know how I feel, man. You taught me so much, and I really appreciate it. And it'll be sad that we can't turn to each other and yak at each other about baseball like we did before, or go have coffee. But I'll keep in touch. You know, you got my iPhone email address, and you know I'm all over every email that you send, and hopefully you'll do the same and not make me worry.
Okay, bud.
All right, have a good one. Take care.
Okay, we'll talk to you next week. Cheers.
Enjoy your baseball.